Welcome to Maximizing ROI Through Data Center Transformation, sponsored by Nutanix on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. During the discussion, we will explore how agencies are shifting their focus from data center consolidation to transformation. Here's your host, Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program. Budget pressures across government mean that every dollar gets a name and a purpose, and that any functions that federal agencies can do that will free some of those dollars for other names and other purposes will become more valuable and will become more common. Data center consolidation is a term that more agencies have become familiar with. Through the Office of Management and Budget's Federal Data Center Consolidation Initiative, a number of variables have contributed to successes and, in some cases, to holdups in the DCCI. We'll talk about those today with our expert panel, Darren Ash, the Deputy Executive Director for Corporate Management in the Executive Director's Office and Chief Information Officer at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Good to see you, Darren. Chris Howard is Vice President of Federal Sales for Nutanix. Chris, thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
The Brigadier General Kevin Nally is the Chief Information Officer of the United States Marine Corps. General, thank you very much for coming today. And Fred Whiteside is the dedicated Agency Data Center Consolidation Program Manager at the Department of Labor. Fred, it's good to see you. Let's start with
you,
Fred. The most important thing that I understand when it comes to data center consolidation and transformation, we'll talk about the difference in that term in a minute, is developing your business plan. How are you going to proceed? What do you want your enterprise to look like at the end? And how is that different from where you start? Talk about how that worked at the Labor Department.
Well, I think the Department of Labor faces the same challenges that a lot of larger departments do. We have agencies that have disparate missions, and every agency pretty much has its own IT resources and functions. Coordinating all of those and moving them in the same direction and preparing them for this sort of a transformation is probably the biggest challenge. What we did at the Department of Labor was we focused on our local areas first, then the metropolitan area, and then we took a larger look at what we have nationally. Of course, that's a longer-term focus, and I think this program will probably run its full course that the procurement was intended to, which is probably about 7 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The geographical approach was one of number of choices you could have taken. Why did you go that way? Just because you had folks here in D.C. that would be that was going to be easier for you to perform oversight, other issues?
Well, fortunately, a large part of the Department of Labor's resources are here locally. So the larger bureaus and some of the larger data centers are in this area. Obviously, it's Washington, D.C., so we're headquartered here. But we looked at logistics such as disaster recovery and establishing a presence there as well. So there were a lot of things that obviously went into that decision. Mm-hmm. But of course, this is where it all begins. This is where it starts. Yeah.
Darren Ash of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, talk about the development of your business plan. Not just the questions that you asked and that you wanted answers for to determine what the enterprise transformation would look like, but the stakeholders that were involved. And were there some folks involved that maybe one wouldn't think this is someone who's going to be integrated into a data center consolidation initiative?
Yeah, that's a great question. Actually, I'll answer it two ways,
sure.
Francis. When we initiate, we're obviously a different type of agency than obviously the Marine Corps or the Department of Labor, much smaller footprint, number of offices, organizations. What was interesting and unique for us was an opportunity where we were constructing a new headquarters building, seeing that as an opportunity to address some antiquated activities, an old data center, to be able to consolidate, to be able to save resources, and obviously do it in a much greener fashion. Other reasons in terms of a business case that rose to the top in terms of why this was important to us. So it was a unique opportunity, one that we wanted to take advantage of. What that factored into is who are all the different stakeholders, your second question. Obviously, the business system owners, those that have systems and applications residing in the data center, wanted to make sure that are we going to migrate, are we going to do things right? Because this is more and was always intended to be more than just what we coin as a forklift. Move servers to a new data center. it presented opportunities to think differently about how do we host, how do we house, and the type of equipment we want to use. We needed to and have to include those individuals in the planning process.
General Nally, you have unique applications in the Marine Corps, at least as far as this panel is concerned. No other warfighters sitting with us today. What kind of difference did that make as you strategized your data center consolidation initiative?
Francis, first, as you're all aware, we're, unlike the, most of these gentlemen here too, we don't make money. We're warfighters first and foremost. So we look at the difference between effectiveness and efficiency. We have to be effective first and then be as efficiently as we possibly can, right? But what we looked at was we decided a few years ago to build out our own private cloud in Kansas City, Missouri. We call it McKeats, Marine Corps Enterprise IT Service Center. We've got a little over 17, 18 applications programs in there right now, and we're taking an approach to consolidate apps and programs spread out throughout the Marine Corps. So Kansas City will be our federated approach, and then we have what we call eight MITSEs, which is a MAGTAF, Marine Air Ground Task Force, IT support centers located throughout the United States, Okinawa, Hawaii, and one in Europe. And we're going to, so the federated piece will be in Kansas City. The distributed piece will be out to those MITSEs, and then the deployed piece will be out to our Marines aboard naval vessels, amphibious ships, or the forward operating bases in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. But again, we're warfighters first and foremost, so we concentrate on consolidating and making sure that the Marines have access to those critical command and control warfighting platforms that they need at the right time.
Mm-hmm. Chris Howard of Nutanix, the stories that you hear on our panel today, how are they similar to or different than the people that you work with all across the federal government who are dealing with this same issue?
I think at the end of the day, pretty much everyone's story is similar outside of people having different apps like the Marine Corps versus the Department of Labor or something of that nature. But mm-hmm. they all have the same dilemma. You know, how do they reduce the overall footprint from a number of data centers while at the same time not just doing a forklift, a move, as Mr. Ash said? That's kind of the inefficient way to do it, in at least my opinion, and I'm sure a lot of people would agree, some would disagree, but I think we have to figure out how to streamline the support and operation and maintenance of these data centers, reduce the overall footprint, but at the same time, you cannot eliminate the effectiveness of what you're delivering as either a mission-critical application or a nuclear type of application. So you have to remain effective, but we have to figure out how to do more with less, right? The government has overall less money, but the requirements aren't shrinking. The requirements are growing every day. So how do we reduce the overall footprint but still maintain the support and effectiveness of what we're delivering as a mission critical application? So I think it's all the same. Each one's got its own uniqueness, obviously, when you drill down into the applications, but the methodology behind it is always very similar.
Well, Chris, the title of our conversation today is interesting to me because it uses the term data center transformation rather than OMB's data center consolidation. And Darren, it sounds like that's kind of the attitude, at least, if maybe not the name, that you took when you had this opportunity to transition from one location to another, that you were trying to think of not just how do we have fewer boxes or how do we have fewer locations, but what does this mean for the end user, the person who's trying to pull information out of our network? Am I on the right track there?
It is. And I would add in one area, and I think we've already somewhat touched on it, which is green. One of the neat things about the facility that it's in, the building that it's in, it's a LEED Gold building. And how do we stay true to that expectation, which is a truly efficient, energy-saving type of environment in terms of effectiveness, in terms of cooling and management? And that was an important characteristic that was important to us.
Mm-hmm. Fred, you're nodding your head in agreement with that. Tell me about the energy considerations that were made. Agencies are really realizing, it seems to me, the benefits of energy savings and that there's a lot of money going out the door to the electric companies across the country.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think moving to you know, these new, improved, modernized data centers is an important step. However, it's important to also understand that as we are, many agencies are moving from GSA lease space now to commercial space because obviously most of those types of data centers are commercial offerings. So there's an immediate increase in cost. and you sort of touched on it earlier, I think that if you're moving in the direction of best practices, you know, moving towards cloud computing, virtualization, and some of the other technologies that will really move you forward, I think that you get there. Transforming old space that was really data centers that were created from, you know, just general office space where you have no real stratification of cost or it's in power consumption, it's really difficult to really realize those savings. But I think, again, if you move towards the direction of best practices, you achieve it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. General, energy obviously is a consideration on all of the forces. Each of the branches of the military are becoming more and more aware of their energy consumption and where they can trim it. Tell me about that component of your strategy.
That's easy, Francis. The Commandant several years ago established what he calls his Expeditionary Energy Office. So two things. One, at the Enterprise garrison level, we began installing DWDM GPON, which, as you all know, is energy efficient, and it's going to allow us to have a more secure Marine Corps Enterprise network as well. But additionally, as part of his office, all deputy commandants have been tasked and look at ways to save energy, and his office experiments with energy efficient types of devices. For example, I'll talk from an IT perspective, and they do these tests out in 29 Palms usually. But for the radio operators, a radio operator that carries a pack and carries a radio into combat, for example, I use Afghanistan, two lithium batteries, so one in the radio, one in the kit, his pack, that takes weight. And normally on a 3-5 day patrol, you're carrying more than two batteries. You're carrying 5-7 days worth of batteries, which the more batteries you put in your pack, the less food or water or medical supplies or bullets that you can put in your pack. What the Commandant's office did was develop a solar panel. It's very, very small, and they use these in Afghanistan now, where instead of they take one battery and put it in the radio, one battery in the pack, and the Marine carries this solar panel. So when he has downtime, he'll recharge the batteries. So not just more energy efficient, but the biggest key that I stress on that is it's saving lives, because you don't have to have Marines get in a helicopter, get in a truck or an MRAP or a Humvee and drive out to these positions in the remotest parts of Afghanistan to resupply them with batteries. So that's the key, is that the Marine commanders are telling me it's saving lives.
Chris Howard of Nutanix, the intersection of data center transformation and some of the other trends that we've already talked about, cloud computing and so on, how tightly knit are they together, or how desegregated are some of these other things that people are focusing on?
I mean, I think they're all pretty tightly knit. I mean, when you look at cloud computing or virtualization, moving to virtual desktops, some of the big data things that are going on, obviously those are new and innovative approaches to do business differently than you've done it in the past. You know, cloud computing, whether it's private cloud or public cloud, there's efficiencies not only from a application delivery, but a power, cooling, manpower perspective. So in my opinion, they're all very, very interconnected. I don't see them as these silos of activities. You know, once you decide to transform your data center, it's not just, you know, shrinking my footprint. I mean, that's one aspect of it, but there's efficiencies that can be had across the board from how do you deliver the applications, who's consuming them, where they're consuming them from, is it private, is it public, are you virtualized 100%, 50%? These are all thoughts that go into your overall transformation agenda. So if they're not tightly coupled together, then you're probably going to miss out on a tremendous amount of efficiencies.
Darren, you're violently nodding your head in agreement there.
I absolutely agree. And I think some of the foundational, all the foundational work that we're doing is a precursor and a transitional activity to support our move to the cloud.
Uh-huh.
A, we have to understand what we've got, the information that's housed in those applications and systems, and our efforts in virtualization, whether it's a server virtualization, desktop virtualization, all those activities will best support our efforts to move to the cloud.
Fred Whiteside of Labor, tell me about how all of these other things that don't immediately sound like they're data center consolidation initiative related fit into the way that you developed how you were going to move forward?
Oh, absolutely. So the procurement that I mentioned earlier had provisions for every single one of those technologies. We have a sort of a CLIN for managed services, cloud computing. So it's obviously one total strategy. And like Darren mentioned, it is. All of it is a precursor to moving in that direction. I think that's where you maximize your efficiencies. It's a heavy lift. I mean, to move from where we are currently directly to the cloud. And I think in the early days of cloud computing, we thought that we could move much more efficiently in that direction than we actually can. Mm-hmm. It's a big ship that turns slowly, as you've heard the phrase used. But I think that most of our agencies have really began to realize that this is a systems, applications, and capabilities approach to migration, and not a forklift, as Darren mentioned. Mm-hmm. And most of our, I know ours was, these procurements were really written in a sort of a forklift fashion. But I think federally, across the entire federal government, we're really beginning to rethink that and take a different approach.
Is that just from the operational perspective that you think that is driving that? People are having the experiences that you've had said, wait a minute, maybe we should do it differently? Or is there something else behind that?
Sure. And I think it is because once we really got under the covers of this thing, we realized that it's sort of the iceberg, right, with bigger in the bottom and, you know, mm-hmm. very little on top, what's visible. And it is. It's just, I think, dynamically, as we move through this, we realize that it's just a much more efficient way. And it's also an opportunity to look at across your enterprise and look at the systems and services that you have and take a second look at them and possibly upgrade, decommission, or find some that are really prime candidates to move to a cloud. Mm-hmm. So we're doing all of those things and making that analysis sort of on the fly as we approach migration.
Chris Howard, just a minute or so left in this part of the conversation, but as we talk about the business plan, the preparation for this data center transformation, what are the one, two, three things that you see agencies do that either really help them long-term to actually execute or hold them up where they wouldn't need to be held up?
I think for the most part, there's a couple of things. One is first to assess what you have and come up with a proper list of what you can kill from an application perspective, what you can hold on for a little while, and what you will never decommission. Because if you want to create efficiencies and move to the cloud, you have to know what really is necessary from a day-to-day perspective to run our business, right? Eliminate the duplication of efforts that are existing in the environment. So I think the assessment piece is first. Secondly, I think it's virtualize. The federal government as a whole, some are extremely virtualized and some are very little virtualized. I go into a lot of data centers where maybe they're 10-15% virtualized. And it's not because the applications can't be virtualized. It could be a number of different things. But I think after you do the assessment and figure out what's going to be long-standing in your environment, virtualize it. Because once you get to a virtualized state, then regardless of where you're going, public, private cloud, different data center within your organization, it makes it extremely easier, I should say, to move to that new environment. So assess, virtualize, and then I guess figure out if you're going to keep it in your own private cloud or move it to the public cloud. Those seems to be the only two sustainable options.
That's Chris Howard of Nutanix, along with Darren Ash, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Brigadier General Kevin Nally of the Marine Corps, and Fred Whiteside of the Labor Department. We'll continue our conversation, Maximizing ROI Through Data Center Transformation, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
I'm Dave Gwynn, VP of Federal Sales for Nutanix. Billions of dollars are wasted each year buying legacy storage technologies that haven't changed meaningfully in 15 years. There is a more modern way. The Nutanix Virtual Computing Appliance transforms federal data centers, providing the positive aspects of the public cloud, but inside your firewall, so you maintain control and security.
Nutanix eliminates the complexity of three-tier storage systems while reducing CapEx and OpEx.
Let Nutanix help you meet your IT missions. Visit Nutanix at nutanix.com/federal.
8 out of every 10 government IT projects involving virtualization fall short of the initial vision due to infrastructure complexity. Nutanix, with its scalable virtual computing appliance, overcomes the 10 common IT pitfalls that lead to failed federal virtualization projects. In the last 18 months, 75 federal entities have selected Nutanix because it's the most efficient and cost-effective way to ensure virtualization success. Maximize ROI through data center transformation. Visit Nutanix.com/federal for more information. That's NUTANIX.com/federal.
Welcome back to the panel discussion, Maximizing ROI Through Data Center Transformation, sponsored by Nutanix. My guests today, Darren Ash of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Chris Howard of Nutanix, Brigadier General Kevin Nally of the Marine Corps, and Fred Whiteside of the Labor Department. And gentlemen, one of the issues that I want to address is exactly what it is that you're transforming. As I've watched congressional hearings, as I've read accounts of what you and your colleagues at other agencies have done, different people seem to have different ideas of what exactly you're transforming, and that is, what is a data center in the first place? Darren, let's start with you. How do you attack that when there seem to be these varying definitions of what it is you're supposed to be dealing with in the first place?
So, Francis, thank you. That's a great question. Actually, before I get to about the definition of a data center, I really want to first focus on why we do this in the first place. We don't do IT for IT's sake. We do it for the mission. And the thing that I think about, and you think about the old stories, and it may not be old stories across government or any organization, are the proverbial servers under the desktop, or the servers that are sitting in a closet that's unventilated. Those are the things that I worry about. And the reason I worry about that is if that system or application that's residing on that server is not backed up, there's no disaster recovery, how is it that we're able to perform that aspect of the mission? And so the concept of data center transformation, data center optimization, or in effect doing this right, really gets to what do we need to do as a modern, effective organization to ensure the continuity of our mission? And that means that we run it efficiently, effectively, have the right equipment, green, all the things we've talked about, whether it's a closet or it's in a little room or in a vast warehouse. In my mind, it doesn't matter. What we need to focus on, what we have to focus on, is set aside the definitions. What's the best and most effective way for us to run our enterprise? And that's what I want to focus on.
With portable computing, mobility, and so on, general, it seems to me that especially given the kinds of missions that you and your personnel undertake, you could have data centers all over the place, even on people now.
True. And but we we look at it, we start from, if you will, the foxhole and work our way back to, I'll use the beltway, back to D.C., so if it works from the foxhole back to DC, that's okay. That's okay with me at the enterprise level. And if, but my challenge here in DC is a lot of focus is starting here in the beltway, and then they'll get you 2/3 to the fight, and then it's like, well, you got to figure out the rest. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not helping the warfighter out. So we in the Marine Corps focus on this is what the warfighter needs. How do we get it back into network? And We have consolidated some data centers. We still have more to go, but it will be more effective and reduce costs and secure and reduce costs and labor. But the challenge that I came into is I got a great plan from my predecessor, but we went from the Navy Marine Corps Internet. We decided to get out of that because the commanders lacked the flexibility to control the warfighting platforms riding on the network, so we decided to go government-owned, government-operated, and the contract was signed, and call it the Department of Navy calls it the Next Generation Network, but we kind of don't use that term very much anymore, so we just call it the government-owned, government-operated Marine Corps Enterprise Network. But you're right, and then not to take up too much time, but we're looking at, we've got it recently approved through NSA, we call it the Trusted Handheld, which will be a tactical device or a garrison device that the security will be embedded in the kernel. So eventually you'll have be able to use that device for personal use or organizational use. But the trusted green piece, if you will, will be able to be used on the battlefield. And we have a device that's been procured, and it's out at California right now. They're using, Marines out there use it. It's called Networking on the Move, which allows the commander to actually walk away from the vehicle 300-400 yards, talk back to the vehicle. The vehicle talks back to a point of presence suite, and then that goes back up into the cloud, back into our enterprise network. So we're tied in from each one of our Marine Expeditionary Forces in Okinawa, California, Camp Lejeune, out to the battlefield or the ships.
Fred, wrestling with the definition of a data center, what was that process like at Laborer, given the moving target that that definition seems to have become?
Well, obviously it impacted planning to some degree and your ability to assess what you have. But I think that, like Darren mentioned, there's been this longstanding problem with organizations creating, you know, small capabilities that they control that, from an enterprise perspective, are sort of below the radar. So everybody knew that that was a bit of an issue. So I don't think that the definition really impacted you as much as some may have let on. It was important, obviously, from a reporting perspective, but logistically, I don't think it really impacted things much. Everybody knew what the problem was and exactly what needed to be done to fix it. And most pursued it once the program began.
Chris, is that your observation from the vendor side? I mean, Darren, I think, spoke very eloquently about the idea that the point of this is not technology. The point of this is mission execution. That gets to also what General Nally talked about and what Fred has talked about at Labor. Do we maybe get hung up too much sometimes on the technology names and definitions and all of that stuff at the expense of the execution pieces?
Absolutely. I mean, the whole consolidation initiative, take, for instance, one of the branches of the military, you know, they maybe thought they had 100 data centers, when in reality, based on the definition that was put out there, they had 470, because the definition was very narrow, I mean, very specific, you know, whatever it is, 300 square feet with a rack or a power cord or whatever the definition is. But, I mean, that's good. We have to consolidate the data centers, but you can't lose focus of the mission-critical applications that you're delivering. And whether you deliver that from one data center or 200, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter as long as you're fulfilling the mission and everything's still 100% effective. So just going out there and saying, take 50 of those and close them down, you know, call that a win. That's not a win unless you're still being effective in delivering whatever it is, whether it's a military app or a federal civilian app. So, yeah, I think that the key focus should be on what's the mission requirements and are we doing a good job of delivering that to the consumers of those applications. Closing data centers is important, but that's not a win by just shutting down a building.
Fred, how did you stay away from that concept? That traditionally has been the way agencies want to do it. Let's check off a list, or let's do certain numbers, certain percentages, whatever. And as Chris says, call that a win. How do you avoid that at Labor?
Well, you know, again, I think I sort of touched on it before, and that is that everybody knew it was a problem, and there are many of us who wanted to solve this and attack this issue of data centers under desk. Mm-hmm. I mean, so I think we really just we looked across our enterprise and just figured out what needed to be done from a disaster recovery perspective, from mm-hmm. a redundancy and efficiency perspective, and just sort of let OMB work out their definitions and they did. They slowly worked through it. But again, like Darren said, if you're actually approaching IT and approaching IT with business mission and in mind and supporting services, then I think you know what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And that's how we approached it. And so far, it's worked for us pretty efficiently. Yeah.
I want to talk about the change management piece of this because, again, to follow up on Darren's point, that this is not just IT for the sake of IT and we're not just changing for the sake of changing. And I'll start with you, Darren, since you brought it up. Tell me about the change management piece of this from a people perspective. You know, we talked about the business plan. It's in the process of execution. The technology piece of it is fine. where these things seem to succeed or fail is in how you get the stakeholders who you identified earlier to be engaged, to be involved, to buy in, and to proceed. That's where I want to go next.
If I use two words maybe to dive into this question, it would be control and trust. And that is probably the two, those are two, in my mind, two of the bigger areas of change and change management. In a traditional sense where the data centers and all the servers are dispersed throughout the organization, different locations, individuals are in control of those boxes for different reasons. A change in moving those servers, moving those applications to a more centralized location, or again, an optimized situation, takes away from that control. And that control may have been designed for certain reasons, because of the care and feeding that was necessary for those applications or for those boxes, or for other reasons. So that change aspect has to be managed and recognized up front. The second piece gets back to the trust, because if some of this ends up in a more centralized type of environment, where it is consolidated or optimized into a few locations or the right number of locations, you've got to ensure that we trust the capacities there, the connections are there, and when I say connection, riding the bandwidth. All those types of things have to be factored in. Do we have everything thought through that we can trust it and trust the organization that's also managing it, whether it's the government organization that's managing it or the private sector organization that's managing it?
General Nally, the change management issue at the Marine Corps, the perception, at least from the outside, is a little different than the civilian organizations. The perception is that, well, he can just tell people to do things and they'll do them because he outranks them. That may or may not be true, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're doing it because they understand the value to the organization. They're doing it because he told me I have to. So talk about developing the elements that Darren talked about in your change management plan when you're executing something like data center transformation.
Okay, Francis, so I'll take it from the bottom up first and then from the top down second. Okay. So from the bottom up, if my Marines or civilians or contractors come up with a great idea, or from the operating forces, a great, you know, C4 IT cloud type idea, and they bring it to me as a, you know, as a requirement, then I have to sell this to our deputy commandants, which are the 3 stars, to show them the value of this and how it's going to enhance a commander's decision-making ability at a critical time and critical location. And then what's it going to cost? Because in this budget-constrained environment we're in right now, for the next 10 years probably, it comes down to money at the end of the day. That's the first way that top-down approach is even actually a little bit easier, as you alluded to on the perception piece, because I can remember barely a year into the job, the commandant calls me in his office at 1400 on an afternoon and very collegial talk, and he says, Kevin, he says, I want every Marine to have the same service that I have, and that includes privates. And I said, yes, sir, that's the easiest mission statement I can think of. And I use that to this day when I'm telling ask my people what we need to do. I'm saying every Marine needs to have the same level of service that the commandant has. And that carries a lot of weight.
That strikes me that is powerful all the way down at the private level.
Well, it shows the commandant's care and concern. I mean, he's so concerned about those very junior Marines that he wants to make sure that they have the ability to conduct the missions that he asks them to conduct in an effective and efficient manner and to save lives.
Mm-hmm. Change management piece at Labor, Fred. And this isn't an issue where you have a lot of end users, non-technology people, who can see a difference between how their app ran before and how it runs now. But there are plenty of people that you needed to bring along, I imagine, as Darren talked about, especially in the care and feeding realm of this, and especially as we think about the integration we talked about earlier, moving to the cloud and virtualization applications.
Yeah, I think the ugly truth of the migration of consolidation of data centers, of course, and then the migration to the cloud is that it changes people's lives. People who actually work in various capacities now, those jobs no longer exist. for better or for worse. You know, as taxpayers, I think that that's a good thing. We're saving money, and I think all of us as taxpayers will applaud that. However, I've often said that, you know, a year is an eternity in this business, and I think it's very important for people who earn their living in this field to understand that, you know, there's always an opportunity to reinvent yourself. If you think about the technologies that we use today, most of them have not been around that long. Mm-hmm. An expert has been doing it 5 years. You see what I mean? So there's always an opportunity to gain new skills and adapt one's skills to stay, you know, gainfully employed and in front of the technology. And that's, I think that is the reality of the world we live in now. I know many people are uncomfortable with that reality, but that is the way that, unfortunately, we're going to save money. And of course, it creates opportunities in other areas. Mm-hmm. You know, you have very large cloud service providers that are expanding capabilities every day. They need skilled people, you know, so these jobs don't necessarily go away. They transform. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really the important point here.
Chris Howard of Nutanix, the change management piece of this, again, who's the people who have done it successfully, what have they done to do so? The people who have struggled, where have they struggled with the change management part here?
The people that have done it successfully take a lot of time and effort up front before they do any of these changes, whether that's a certain initiative around, you know, virtual desktops or cloud or whatever it is. But they do a lot of upfront work to make sure that their users are comfortable, you know, the consumers of whatever technology they're delivering are comfortable with whatever the change is, and have trust, as Darren said, in that the service levels are still going to be provided, the accessibility of the environment is going to be provided regardless of what the use case is. So those people that take the time up front to work with their end users are generally more successful. The ones that aren't successful are more do stuff on a shotgun approach and just make a wholesale change. And then I don't care if you're delivering it effectively, your users aren't going to be happy. They're just not. They'll fight it tooth and nail just because they weren't involved. They had no say in it. You know, if it's a virtual desktop initiative, they don't like the new device or whatever it is. So I think the more time you take up front to work with your people, gain the trust that you're going to deliver the applications in the same way you've been delivering them, you're going to provide the same level, if not better, SLAs, I think you'll be successful. Maybe not 100% of the time, but certainly more than you will without taking them into consideration before you do whatever the change is that you're going to make.
Chris Howard of Nutanix, one of the participants in our panel discussion today. Fred Whiteside of the Labor Department, Brigadier General Kevin Nally of the Marine Corps, and Darren Ash of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission also joining us. You're listening to the panel discussion, Maximizing ROI Through Data Center Transformation, sponsored by Nutanix on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
8 out of every 10 government IT projects involving virtualization fall short of the initial vision due to infrastructure complexity. Nutanix, with its scalable virtual computing appliance, overcomes the 10 common IT pitfalls that lead to failed federal virtualization projects. In the last 18 months, 75 federal entities have selected Nutanix because it's the most efficient and cost-effective way to ensure virtualization success. Maximize ROI through data center transformation. Visit Nutanix.com/federal for more information. That's NUTANIX.com/federal.
I'm Dave Gwynn, VP of Federal Sales for Nutanix. Billions of dollars are wasted each year buying legacy storage technologies that haven't changed meaningfully in 15 years. There is a more modern way. The Nutanix Virtual Computing Appliance transforms federal data centers, providing the positive aspects of the public cloud, but inside your firewall, so you maintain control and security. Nutanix eliminates the complexity of three-tier storage systems while reducing CapEx and OpEx.
Let Nutanix help you meet your IT missions. Visit Nutanix at NUTANIX.com/federal.
Welcome back to the panel discussion, Maximizing ROI Through Data Center Transformation, sponsored by Nutanix on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guests today, Darren Ash, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Chris Howard of Nutanix, Brigadier General Kevin Nally of the Marine Corps, and Fred Whiteside of the Labor Department. And gentlemen, let's kind of take a retrospective to the benefit of your colleagues who are going through the same thing. Darren, I want to start with you. If we were starting over today, and you were taking the very first step on this path, but you have the benefit of the knowledge you've amassed, and what you've learned from your colleagues as you've gone through this. Are there things that you would do differently? Are there things you would do in a different order? Are there things that you would not do at all? What essentially are the lessons that you've learned throughout this process,
so,
Darren?
Great question. I think this is going to be a mix of things that I'm proud that we did and things we could have improved upon. First one is ensure that we have a dedicated project manager through the whole project. The individual can focus on it. The second one is something that we did include, and I would encourage anybody going down this path to include as well, which gets back to the early engagement with the space and facilities people. And I would include real estate as well. The reason I bring up that, for a couple of reasons. One is this is tied to the concept of freeze the footprint, another administration priority. Again, we've got a lot of data centers out there. They occupy space. There's an interest, obviously, to reduce the amount of real estate that we've got. Again, another key point. Another point for facilities and space, energy consumption. You need to establish the baseline. You know, at some point, somebody's going to ask, what are you saving? When everything's implemented, we can be assured that we've got an energy-efficient type of environment, but did we have the metrics, did we have the data to demonstrate what we saved and how we're doing? So having that in place, the best of our ability, is incredibly important. But their involvement will help ensure that those types of issues are being addressed, not just in the planning, but also in the execution. The final one that I'd mention or reference is early on, think about the platform, the single approach that you want to take. Again, it gets back to the concept of standardization. We talked earlier in the panel about avoiding the forklift. Okay, so if we're not going to do the forklift, what are we trying to strive for? Which then leads to the final point, which is ensuring that whatever that end state is, and the end state is really a transitory type of end state, are you boxing yourself into a corner? And really making sure that whatever you're planning from a technical perspective ensures you've got the means to transition to, whether it's a cloud, private, et cetera, a different type of environment. You don't want to box yourself in.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the metrics, and the metrics I think are important because when I talk about metrics on anything, not just data center transformation, the issue always seems to be, are the metrics important so you can demonstrate what happened or because you didn't know what happened before? And I guess that's my question here is do you believe establishing the metrics are important because you want to compare before and after, or because in some cases you didn't know what you had before and you want to make sure that you at least know what you had after?
I think it's both. I mean, we're always going to be asking, I mean, think about the Government Accountability Office. They're going to come in and ask, what was the end result? Mm-hmm. And they'll come in and do an audit, or the Inspector General, rightfully to assess how we did. Were there any things we could have done differently? But irrespective of GAO or the IG, it is important for us to know what we've got. Again, it gets back to some of the earlier points of doing the assessment, understanding the applications you've got, the information sensitivity, the number of servers, the number of all the different things that you need to know. You need to establish that baseline, but you can't spend oodles of years doing that. At some point, you need to move on. You need to execute. But you need that both to understand what you've got and how you did.
Mm-hmm. Fred Whiteside of the Labor Department, lessons learned, do differently, not do different order, all of that.
Yeah, first of all, one point, Darren makes an excellent point. I think if you would end up with as many methodologies for calculating those savings and identifying those deltas as you do agencies.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a standard methodology for really capturing that. And OMB, they're working towards it. It's been a bit of an exercise in patience for some of us because we're asked to report these things, but, you know, we're no real solid or clear methodology for doing so.
Mm-hmm.
But they're moving towards it, and I think that's important. Everybody has to use the same method, first of all. But more to the point of the question, we have had an opportunity to, like I mentioned earlier, step back and look at the entire enterprise and make some really important decisions.
Mm-hmm.
We are in the process of redeveloping our enterprise architecture at the same time. We're developing a target architecture at the same time. that we're moving forward with consolidation and migration to cloud computing. So, you know, this is a lot of activity all at one time. And I think that in a perfect world, you would have loved to have had an opportunity to take some time to plan. But I don't think that's realistic. You know, at some point, you absolutely do have to go ahead and pull the trigger and move forward. And it's working. But I think that was probably the most difficult thing. Because I think you learn a lot about yourselves as an organization when you take on a task like this. And it's nice to be able to really take those lessons learned and plan around them. But it's just really difficult to do that on the fly, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I think that would probably be the biggest difficulty and the biggest thing that I would probably change. Yeah.
General Nally, how about you? Lessons learned, things that you would do differently, advice for your colleagues that are undergoing these transformations?
Again, being in the military, we're a little bit different. So I really don't have anything that I would do differently. I'd say my biggest, I got some great people that work with me. And the credit goes to them. And for example, when we decided to collapse five of our unclassified networks into one over the course of a couple years, and that's part of the joint information environment effort, the JIE environment, I had great engineers that came in and they put this chart up the length of my conference room, and then they put one on top. They said the bottom one is as is, the top one's to be. And just if you weren't even from an IT background, you look at the top one and you go, wow, there's less IT, there's less boundaries, so it's more secure, less labor, et cetera. And you just go, wow, that's the plan. But my biggest challenge is I have Marines that they come work with me for 3 years and then they get orders to go to Okinawa or California, and then you get somebody new in and it takes a while to get spun up on the plan, and then they're gone. And that's my biggest challenge, is retaining people. But it's good for them to move on and move about, though. But that's my challenge.
Chris, one of the things that Darren and Fred both talked about was transformations of other types simultaneous to their data center transformations. Fred talked about an enterprise architecture redesign at the same time they did theirs. Darren talked about a physical move to a planning to move to a different location. Is that an opportunity, or is that a potential hurdle? Now, they've both done theirs successfully, but I wonder if it might be an advantage or a detriment to add other moving parts to the same time you're doing a data center transformation.
I think we discussed this earlier. I think that, you know, there's a lot of different activities that happen simultaneously, and all of them are just as important as the IT or data center consolidation. Picking the right location to be as efficient or green as possible, that's extremely important. Eliminating applications or duplication of efforts at the same time you're transforming, that's important. How many data centers you move from? If you have 100, do you go to 10 or 5 or 4? So all of these decisions have to be made in tandem. None of them can be siloed approach. You can't make one decision based on, well, let's move everything from 10 data centers to one, but then you don't think about, well, how are we getting those applications from point A to point B? How many of those applications do we really need? You know, how are we going to pay the bill for the cooling and power and green IT and those types of things? So I think you have to take all of them into account. It can be overwhelming. There's no question about it. But you have to have the right people with the right focus. They have to have buy-in to what you're trying to accomplish. So there's a lot of moving parts, and it's not easy. Obviously, these guys have all done it. I've been a part of it, but I've not been responsible for doing it. And I can't imagine the overwhelming responsibility that comes with that. So it's not easy. There's one customer in particular one that I've worked with that has hundreds of data centers, and one of the leaders of that organization stood up and said, well, I've got good news and bad news. Good news is we closed 49 data centers. Bad news is we didn't save one penny. So there wasn't a lot of thought put into how to do that, not only from the application and where the locations are moving to. Is it forklift? Is it just a data migration? So without taking all of those things into consideration, it may just be, you know, a worthless adventure from a cost perspective. Mm-hmm. So
is that then the lesson learned that you would try to convey most adamantly to somebody who's starting down this path, is the strategy that each of our panelists has talked about today and the importance of that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's got to be more to just saying, okay, that location can be shut down, just move it from here to here. does that really accomplish anything? So I think the overall plan and strategy and you know, all the different things that you need to take into consideration from an IT, facilities, power, cooling, you have to have a good plan. And without a good plan, it's just going to be a move from, you know, one bad place to another. There's no improvements. There's no streamlining or efficiencies in that.
And that's where we'll wrap up, Darren. I'll ask each of you to give me some thoughts about strategy planning. If you were sitting down with a colleague of yours having a cup of coffee, what would you tell that person over the coffee, Darren, in a minute or so about what they should do strategically to get ready for this kind of transformation?
Strategic is not thinking of data center transformation solely unto itself, as Chris was saying. It really is tied intrinsically with a whole bunch of other things, whether it's cloud, freeze the footprint, virtualization. There's a whole bunch of different things that we have to take in consideration and plan for that and think it through.
General Nally, strategic advice?
Have a vision, strategy, plan of action, milestones, figure out where you're going to get the resources from, start to execute and get senior leadership buy-in.
Fred Whiteside, Labor Department. Your strategy advice for your colleagues who are about to go down this path?
I would imagine you'd be better served looking at the enterprise and developing that target, developing a target architecture, and understanding where it is that you want to be, and using these consolidation, cloud, virtualization as all tools to get you to a particular place. And I think if you think about it from that approach, I don't think you can go wrong.
Gentlemen, I want to thank all of you for participating in our conversation today. Darren Ash of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Chris Howard of Nutanix, Brigadier General Kevin Nally of the Marine Corps, Fred Whiteside of the Department of Labor. Thank you all for being here. You've been listening to our panel discussion, Maximizing ROI Through Data Center Transformation, sponsored by Nutanix on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Thank you for listening to Maximizing ROI Through Data Center Transformation, sponsored by Nutanix on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any portion of this show, you can listen to the show in its entirety and on demand at federalnewsradio.com.
8 out of every 10 government IT projects involving virtualization fall short of the initial vision due to infrastructure complexity. I'm Dave Gwynn, Vice President of Federal Sales for Nutanix. Our scalable virtual computing appliance overcomes the 10 common pitfalls that antiquated server SAN architectures introduce. In the last 18 months, 75 federal entities have selected Nutanix because it's the modern, efficient, and cost-effective way to ensure virtualization success.
Visit Nutanix.com/federal. That's Nutanix.com/federal.